You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Sarah Stern. Sarah, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited to speak with you.
Sarah, we're going to talk about your show called Study for a Scene at, or Take a Guess at Projects. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, an installation, and let's just jump into that. The title of the show, Study for a Scene, and how that title reads the work in some ways. Can you tell me about that? Just the relationship of the title to the show.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in setting up scenarios for myself where I might sort of be able to trick myself into thinking that something's a study or a rehearsal or like a becoming testing ground, which then allows me to play a little longer. So part of the title was also setting that scenario up for myself. But in the case of this show, I was thinking about it like a study for a scene in which a window or the glass is in a window is dealing with the repercussions of its own mirroring of the sky as a material in the built environment. So that's kind of what led to the title of the show. And I guess to speak a little bit, should I speak a little generally about the show?
Sure, yeah, because that's kind of interesting. That's both abstract and clear what you just said. So yeah, tell me more about the show, yeah.
Yeah, well, to take a step back, it's kind of like an offshoot or a parallel piece to a longer-term project that I've been calling Hard Material, which questions the ways that marble and glass have been made into kind of like puppets of the built environment or of architecture. And the piece is starring this character that I've been calling Marble or Marble Man and Glass or Glass Girl. And I carved an initial cast of marble characters in 2021 during this residency I had at the carving studio in West Rutland, Vermont. And then in the last year and a half, I've been learning to work with glass in a variety of ways to make the glass character. And while I've been doing that research and somatic learning to make these glass performance objects, I've been really fascinated by the different optical qualities that cast and flameworked glass have, especially when they're filmed through a lens, like in video, and also when they're rear projected or projected on. So this show came in part out of my fascination with these various qualities of opacity and reflectivity, and I've been interested in the ways in which glass can do these quick switches. And of course, if we're walking down the street in the city during the day and we look up at a glass curtain wall, it's often reflecting the sky at night. I think about the glass kind of like a scrim in the urban environment, and at night, of course, we can see through. So it creates this kind of theatrical situation as a material when it's used in architecture. And I started to think about glass as like the ultimate doppelganger material or character, where it can very easily mirror or double and also do all of these phantasmagoric illusions like Pepper's ghost. And so I was interested in engaging it as this kind of like meta theatrical material, both in architecture and like within the video pieces of my show themselves. And I was also reading Naomi Klein's doppelganger book while working on the show, in which she writes about doppelganger politics and this ever-present potential of slipping into fascism as a kind of mirror world or reverse marionette. So I was thinking about glass in this piece as this material that's ripe for doppelganger exploration. And then I was thinking about the show, especially the central moving image work in it, which is called The Window Felt Shattered, as this study for a scene in which a glass window performs as a doppelganger to the sky, which causes birds to collide with the surface, and then the glass itself kind of reckoning with this imprint that's left on its surface and the kind of glass within the glass within the glass.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, and where you're taking doppelganger, right? Like Naomi Klein's book is so literal in some mm-hmm. ways about like the other Naomi Klein, that's not her.
Totally.
Which is kind of just fascinating. And so, yeah, there's a number of things that you said there that I'd like to jump further into. You talked mm-hmm. about hard material, right, as being mm-hmm. part of that. Glass is one of those hard materials. And you've also, and you mentioned the workshop, stone is also one of those materials.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd like to talk about both. In the stone was from a few years ago, I believe, but you mm-hmm. made videos, right, where those stones that you carve, that you cut, are also talking. There's, you're mm-hmm. mentioning a political dimension with what you're doing now, and the stones, too, were talking, right, in the production of it, the moving image, the film. They're acting as politicians and mm-hmm. debating, right? So tell me a little bit about that as compared to the glass, because they're both, right? They're these hard materials and also not what we typically see in terms of puppets or people talking either.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hard material is kind of like the umbrella title that I'm using for this longer-term project that I'm thinking about as a multimedia puppetry opera that would have both marble and glass puppets voicing these marble and glass characters, where these characters kind of emerge from specific marble or glass facades and sort of battle it out about transparency. And transparency in architecture, like looking at histories of modernism, for instance, and also in politics and the political dimensions of specific buildings. Like, let's say the glass character comes out of the United Nations Secretariat building. That glass character in that scene is going to have a different outlook than, let's say, one that's coming out of a purely corporate building or something like that. And so that's an ongoing project. And the piece that you're referring to, I think, is set in stone, a workshop where I did a workshop of this longer-term performance project where I was really focusing on Marble Man, the marble character. And in that piece, it was a series of vignettes, and one was set at the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C. And the marble characters basically became possessed by Supreme Court justices as they argued the 2015 gay marriage case. And so they, like, became possessed and were speaking out the oral arguments themselves. So I'm really interested in the way that these materials, if they form parts of these buildings, can become kind of haunted by the activities within and then can speak them back and kind of regurgitate them in new ways.
You can go on, because I want to also relate that to The Window Felt Shattered, because that's, you know, another project that's quite a bit different, right? It's a study for a scene, main kind of moving image there, and that's using very different kinds of elements. There's a mime in there, mm-hmm. the actor, and a whole number of things. But these are, you're saying, approaching some of the same issues as in the one you just discussed in terms of hard material, right? But coming from a very different mm-hmm. angle.
Yeah. Totally different angle and very different project. And in The Window Felt Shattered, I was really lucky to get to collaborate with Bill Bowers, who's a renowned New York-based mime. And I invited Bill to basically perform a series of prompts. And in the filming that we did together, he was moving between performing the window and the bird, where they have this encounter of a collision, kind of switching between both perspectives. So I edited that footage, and it intersperses footage of cast glass and flameworked glass sculptures that I've made, which I'm animating both in live action puppetry as well as stop motion animation, and thinking about scenes in which they're sort of having reactions to this potential collision. And Bill's role as the mime is almost like sort of like a narrative force that sometimes propels the narrative, sometimes interjects it. And it's all very abstract also, I should say. And then also with the sound, I was really lucky to get to work with violinist Pauline Kim Harris, who's an amazing New York-based violinist. She did viola and violin, and she recorded improvisatory responses to the video. And I also got to include an excerpt from one of her compositions in the piece as well. And then I did the sound design and recording and engineering was done by Kevin Ramsey at Harvest Works. But anyway, just to say that like the sound is also sort of another element where I was interested in it taking on this kind of glassy metallic quality and being yet another place where there's a kind of mirroring happening as one element of the video. And I was really excited to work with Pauline. One more thing about Pauline is that she is like an expert in extended technique for violin and viola. And so she was also doing all of these glassy experiments and at certain points literally playing the violin and the viola with a flame-worked glass hand that I made. So that is some of the sound in the video comes from that.
Well, that is cool. I'm glad you mentioned that because, yeah, I wouldn't have known, certainly by just reading the credits. And so yeah, you're right. This is a very also abstract piece, right? Yet there is a narrative, right? And there's also, is there also a political comment in here as well as there has been in other works of yours, that this is in some ways about contemporary politics?
Yeah, I was thinking about, I'm always thinking about contemporary politics when I'm working on things. And I think in this case, thinking about these quick switches that can happen around claiming victimhood or certain forms of trauma at different moments and using different language around that. And the glass potentially taking on the trauma of the bird in this study for a scene. All of that remains quite abstract, but I was thinking about that while working on it. The way that the glass kind of takes on this identity of the bird, even though, of course, it is not at all the bird and causes the demise of the bird. So certainly was thinking about political situations in which that has that plays a huge role in the narrative.
The installation itself, the study for a scene, also has a lot of unusual elements in it, right? There's something about it that's quite dramatic, right, between the lighting of the moving image and below it, the reflection, and also a kind of spotlight on the wall, which seems like the way you spotlight the mime, but the spotlight is not the mime. It's another hanging object that obviously has an enormous amount of importance to it, but it's part of the narrative, right? It's not clear how, you know, to me exactly how that fit into the narrative, but it could be interpreted as a bird or something else. But yeah, I'd love to hear about some of those elements and specifically that lighting and the shadow, how that was intended.
For sure. So the walls were painted black, so it was kind of like a black box situation. And then the central piece was rear projected on a window cut out from a partition, a black partition. And then, as you were saying, there was a small mirror floor, almost like a stage coming out, so that it was reflected. And then there's also text in the video, which was frontally projected, so those two channels were kind of separated out. And then to the right, there was a piece called Curtain Call that is a kiln-formed glass toy theater curtain that also appears in the main video as a curtain rising and falling. And that was spotlit in this kind of ghostly way. And then also to the left of the main video, there was a piece where the credits were scrolling, because I like to find a way to credit everyone who collaborates, but that still has a relationship with the work. So in this case, it was rear projected onto a cast glass piece and was always scrolling throughout the run of the show. And then opposite from the central moving image work, there was another piece that was kind of like a small maquette of the main mirrored partition install, and that was a video of a piece of glass catching, animated so that it looks like it's catching its breath, and there was a soundtrack that was barely audible but was present of the glass, like breathing, and I animated that just with light and the shadow moving as if the glass was breathing.
I love that. It's great talking to you about this because the elements are so abstract in the show, and much of it I wouldn't have read that way, but that's so fascinating. So when the work is collected? How is it installed? As an installation, are these separate pieces that could be installed in a home or with a collector, or do you not see them like that?
Yeah, they could be. Actually, I'm really glad you're asking this because it's reminding me that the glass curtain piece, Curtain Call, actually I took out of the show for several days so that it could perform at a puppetry festival at Dixon Place where we rigged it, and it had its own like special performance moment, and then I brought it back to the gallery during the run of the show. So I'm also really interested in these objects having lives, both as sculptures and as performers and characters in a variety of different ways, and I do think that they could live on their own in, you know, in a museum context, a gallery context, a collector context, and then also have a life as part of a larger installation.
So you also had the show at Dixon Place. Tell me about that. How did that differ from this? That was a show that had a beginning and end?
No, that was, well, sort of. It was linear, but it was a series of vignettes with glass performance objects, and we were using live feed video and also small-scale puppetry, so it was happening at two scales at once. But it was really like a workshop for a very new piece. And, it was during the puppetry festival where you have basically less than an hour to do tech and rehearse in the space. So it's a very different kind of timeline than having a show where you have at least a week to install in a gallery. And it was like a very different time frame. And that was interesting for me, too, just to experience all these different rhythms between an installation in a gallery context versus, you know, a puppetry festival where things happen very, very quickly.
And what happened in that puppetry festival exactly? Because, yeah, that is a whole different setup. That's fascinating. How did, for example, the curtain perform there, and what happened? Was it very abstract compared to what came before and after you, or was it speaking a similar language?
All of the pieces, there were four different acts that evening at Dixon Place, and everyone's was radically different from the other in terms of affect and materials. But I went first because, as you can imagine, rigging a glass curtain in the theater is something you don't want to be doing on the fly, like in the middle of the four performances. But the way it worked was that the curtain kind of had the start and the end of our act. And we did a kind of false start, and we were spotlighting the curtain. And it was like we had an orchestral sound as if an orchestra was warming up. And then we kind of redid the start. And so there was a kind of meta theatrics to that piece too, which was very different since it was in a literal theater context. That's the other thing I'm interested in, like playing with these theatrical references in an art installation versus in a puppetry show in an actual theater, and how they come to mean different things and get like literally performed versus just referenced. And that's part of why I was interested in the curtain actually coming to a theater where it's like, you know, so small compared to the actual curtain, which is literally present. It was basically rigged and hung, and then it went up and down a few times, and then we did the rest of our experiment, and then we had a final moment with it.
That sounds fascinating, just to be in those different situations and also at the same time, really, really interesting. It's been great talking to you about all these and the shows that
Likewise.
You continue to have. We'll be links to your website here so everybody can learn more about what you're doing and what's upcoming. Before I ask you the last question, is there anything else you want to say about the show at Ortega y Gasset Projects?
Yes, I wanted to say that I'm so grateful to Adam Liam Rose, who curated the show and is a dear friend and wonderful artist. I was so grateful to do it with him and to get to show at Ortega y Gasset.
I want to ask you one more question, which is off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I've been reading Stephanie Jemison's beautiful book, A Rock, A River, A Street, which is dealing so much with embodied repetition, movement, somatic attunement, and tracing boundaries between internal and external impressions and imprints. And I just finished a residency at the Watermill Center, which was really amazing. And I was doing a bunch of movement experiments there, so getting to read Stephanie's book while I was doing that was incredible. And now that I'm back, I am readjusting to city life by rereading some Ursula K. Le Guin.
Sarah, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I wish you well on your future
Likewise.
Work.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.